Welcome to another episode of Data for Future. Usually when we talk about data, a lot of questions come up with people who want to go into the field asking about how to start a career in data. However, once people get into the field, more questions coming up as how do I develop my data career? And this can involve in many different ways. If you are someone who is very into technical vertical development, you might develop your machine learning AI analytics skills further. Or if you're someone who is more interested in the management side, you might transition from an individual contributor to a team lead. There are also people who are diversifying their portfolio. They are trying to write a blog, giving lectures, and writing books. With many cool options on the table, we want to shed light on how this process is working in real life. That's why today we have Alexey here on the show. Alexey, just a quick introduction. He is the principal data scientist at the company OLLX, which is an online marketplace for local good exchange. Meanwhile, he also runs the data community, datatalks.club, which is a super cool platform to learn more about data knowledge and get to know more data professionals. Alexey also wrote a few books on machine learning AI, one of which is called The Bootcamp. It's a book for software engineers to get into machine learning. So with many things he has been touching upon, I feel he will be a very interesting example to show people what are the possibilities existing there to further develop the data professional career. So welcome to the show, Alexey.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for having me. Thanks for such a great introduction.
So I'm curious, when I see your title is a principal data scientist, how is it different from a data scientist? What's the role about?
So in general, if I want to describe what a principal data scientist is, in a few words, principal data scientist is an internal consultant. So OLLX is quite a large company. We have many, many different use cases for machine learning. We have more than 40 different use cases, like ranging from moderation use cases when we want to prevent, let's say if somebody is trying to sell a gun, we don't want this to happen, or from fraud, or from two recommendations and search. And there are a lot of different use cases. And my role is to help others. So let's say if there is a new project starting, I would try to get involved from the very beginning and try to understand if it's feasible to do this project, like do we really need machine learning for this project or not? What kind of data is there? Has somebody in the company already worked on this project or not? Often it happens that somebody already worked on this and for some reasons project got maybe not successful, or it was successful, but just people don't know about this. So I need to stay on top of everything and know what's going on, and basically help others. And one big direction here, as a principal, I'm driving engineering topics. Mm-hmm. So like once we have a model, how do we go about deploying this? What are the things we need to think about? There are many, many different ways of deploying models. What is the right one? How to make it easier for data scientists to select the right one? Do they have the right tools for that? And things like this. This is one of the things I'm also taking care of.
Wow, that's super cool for a company to have a position for people to do that. Now I understand as many people or company are developing their technology stacks, data tools, it's very common people just get lost. And as you said, like very often the things you're developing, other people already developed, used it, but you just couldn't find it easily. And it seems that you're taking on the more of the consultancy role for the internal company. That's very cool. Did you start it with the company as a principal data scientist?
No. So I started as a senior data scientist. And first I worked on in a team. So I worked on multiple projects. So for example, one of the projects was duplicate detection. So let's say somebody is trying to sell a phone, mm-hmm. and they are so desperate that they post the same phone multiple times on the platform. Mm-hmm. And then for the buyers, for those who want to buy a phone, this is bad user experience, right? So they see the same phone, all over the website, right? Mm-hmm. And there are sometimes cases when these duplicates are actually fraud. So let's say a fraudster mm-hmm. comes to our website and they copy a good listing from somebody who is trying to sell, let's say a phone or I don't know, something else, like usually electronics, and then they pretend it's theirs. So like they're good people.
Wow.
And usually they put a price that is cheaper and they try to trick people into giving them some advance. And the usual line there is, hey, there are three people in front of you, but if you really want to show that you're serious, give me like, I don't know, $50 deposit, things like this.
Okay.
So usually the angle there is it's a duplicate of some other item. Mm-hmm. And this is what I was working on, like the problem I was solving. Then I worked on multiple such problems, and then I eventually got promoted to a lead data scientist. And the lead data scientist is like a principal, but maybe his scope is not like it's a bit like for a principal, maybe the scope is wider. I worked as a lead for some time, like for a year, and now I'm a principal. Doing pretty much the same work, maybe also taking care more of standardization. Like let's say we have 6-7 different teams that use mm-hmm. Machine learning. Like how do we make sure that they all follow the same procedures, the same processes, they use similar tools. So if somebody wants to move from one team to another, they, it's easy for them. So this is the things I'm doing now. But before that, 2-3 years ago, I was working just on usual projects. And I guess this is to answer your initial question, what is the difference between a data scientist and a principal data scientist? This is the main difference. A data scientist is usually assigned to one particular project, to a particular team, while a principal is not assigned to a particular team. And there are many, many projects that they are working on at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It definitely comes from your experience working on individual projects, and you have the pain, you know, like, okay, this schema doesn't work for the other machine learning tool, and how do I monitor and standardize everything? Definitely grow out of it. So what is the stack you've been choosing for a team to use for standardization?
Well, it's not like I'm choosing the stack. It's mm-hmm. We need to think what teams already use and how to make this transition less painful for them. If let's say a team needs to stop using a tool and start using a new tool. And one way to make it smooth is to say, it's not like you stop everything and you migrate and you start using a new tool, but mm-hmm. for new projects, you try to use a new tool. It's not like you have to, but let's try and then explain benefits. So it's not like I'm a boss and telling people you have to do this. I need to do convincing.
Yeah, totally.
So I think need to convince.
Uh-huh. That's the mentality of the principal or the lead is, you're not giving orders. You're trying to convey them, be at servant. This will be good. And you always start with a new project. Yeah, totally. So what about your transition before that, before you get into a senior position? Like when did you switch from a software engineer to a data scientist? And then how did you accumulate your knowledge to be senior enough?
I think for that, a few things helped. So apart from having, I had a usual job. And then in addition to my day-to-day job, I was trying to actively take part in different competitions. Like machine learning competitions like Kaggle, and there are many other platforms for that. I think that really helped to widen my horizon, like to know what are the possible problems that machine learning can solve. And I don't know, in maybe it took part in like 20-30 competitions. I'm not taking part in competitions anymore because they just take too much time. But it was fun. So I think I learned really a lot. And that helped. And then at work, I was just trying to work on what makes sense. And then, but by that I mean, like, what is the problem we're trying to solve? Try to answer that question. Like, is it really helpful, or is it just because somebody read a cool article and want to implement this? What is the reason we're working on this project?
Sure. I do agree. I think that comes a lot with when you transition from a data scientist to a lead mindset. This is very key, you know, like you're not really solving a problem for the intellectual challenge for the problem itself to use a cool algorithm. It's more about coming from the business side, what really is needed and makes sense. And just going back a little bit, when you talk about the Keiko competition, of course, everyone going to learning about data, data science is a platform everyone is looking into. But as you mentioned, it's very time consuming to really participate. Also, if you don't have experience, it's very hard to stand out among all the competitions. If I recall correctly, you actually teach people how to win Keiko competitions. Are there some tips you would like to share?
Well, no, I'm not really teaching because I haven't won a competition on Kaggle. So on Kaggle, it's very tough to win a competition. I did, I was lucky to end up in top 10. Like our team was fifth in one of the competitions, but that was the highest I got. So, and then the prize was top three. So like, I cannot really teach people how to win competitions because I haven't, but maybe if you want to do well in competitions, maybe I can speak about that. Because I think I did quite well there. Yeah, it's just about putting time there. So there is no easy win. So just putting time, then trying different things, checking the forums. There is a lot of information being shared there. And then just also try not, like when I was taking part in these competitions, the code I had was a complete mess. I had like, for a competition, I had like 30, 40 different notebooks. And this is just insane. It's mind blowing to remember, okay, which submission was generated by which notebook. What helps is somehow try to have a system there. Mm-hmm. Maybe use some tracking tool, experiment tracking tool like MLflow to understand what which code really produced this result. And yeah, I would suggest that because for me, that was the main problem when I was taking part. Mm-hmm. More like organizational, like how do I organize my code? Just be ready to put time. Yeah, there is no magic pill.
Do you have teammates to collaborate with?
Yeah, so
how do you find them?
Yeah, the way it usually happens is you go on, let's take Kaggle as an example. You go to Kaggle, you start taking part in a competition, and then you do reasonably well. Let's say you end up in top 100 or top 200. And then we see what are the people around you with a similar score. And then you just say, hey, looks like we're quite close to each other, but still there is a long way up. Let's merge. And then some of them will say, no, sorry, like I'm more like I'm solo. Mm-hmm. But some say yes. And often it happens that people actually start reaching out to you themselves. So I, for example, for a competition where we ended up like in top 20,
mm-hmm.
It was, I don't remember how it actually happened. I think my teammate actually reached out to me saying, hey, do you want to do it together? Mm-hmm. And then we did it together. And instead of being like top 100, we ended up in top 20. So yeah, just reach out to people. But the important thing here is start. So you already need to have a good position there. If mm-hmm. you don't have a good position, and then you say, hey, do you want to team up with, like if somebody reaches out to me and say, do you want to team up with me? No, I don't. Like, why would I? Because you just appeared. I don't know if you're good or not. Mm-hmm. So like, the best way is already start and then show your results.
Yeah.
Right. When you're already on the leaderboard, and then you can reach out to people and say, "Hey, we're close. Let's team up."
Yeah. As you mentioned, like no matter the finding a team for completing a objective, or even the community, the forum offered by Keiko or many other platforms, exactly. There is the idea about learning involves a lot about community and learning from peers or people who have more experience. So I want to transition the lens to your Data Talk Club. I I stumble upon it with one talk, and I find the format outlet is very interesting, and you have very frequent talks, and it's a very relevant topic. I'm very curious what inspired you to start the club in the first place.
Yeah, so communities were a big part of my career, even before I started working. Like being a part of a community was a big part of my, like when I was at school, for example, when I got my first computer, I was learning how to program, and then I didn't have books. And then on top of that, not only I didn't have books, I also couldn't read documentation in English. And it was mostly like my native language is Russian. So there was not much in Russian about that specific language. It was Borland Delphi. So my mother had access to the internet at her work. So I would sometimes go there. And so I found a forum there and on the internet. And then I would just come there and ask questions. And surprisingly, people would just respond. Like it was something simple. And then people would just respond. And then eventually, like I was going there, like collecting my questions, writing them down, and then going to my mom and then asking them on the internet. And eventually somebody asked a question on the forum, and I was able to answer that. That was like, wow, I could help some professional person. Mm-hmm. Like I am maybe in at school, like helping somebody who's already working as a developer. And that like this way I actually learned how to program. Then when I already after my bachelor, when I started my first job as a Java developer, so the way like the first thing I did, I was I registered at a Java forums, like at a forum about Java, and then I started answering questions there. And then after half a year, people thought that I am like I'm an expert, I know something about Java. They didn't know that I'm a junior who just started my career, right? Mm-hmm. So people would ask me questions, right? So they would write me directly asking, hey, how do I do that? And then eventually this even got me like a team lead position in an open source project. I was a junior, I just graduated half a year ago. And then somebody writes me saying, hey, do you want to lead a part of this open source project? I thought, yes, I want, why not? So like communities, they're a big part of my career in general. And then the same, like when I, a couple of years after that, I thought, okay, like I don't want to do Java anymore. I want to do now data science. So what I did, I registered in like there's a Stack Exchange, which is like a network of Q&A questions. Like there is a site called Cross Validated, then there is a site called Data Science. So these are basically like Stack Overflow like websites, but for different topics. And then what I would do there while I was doing my master's is every day I would log in and check what are the questions there, and I would try to answer these questions.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped me, like with interviews afterwards, because people would ask me these questions on the interviews. So I'm not sure if I'm actually answering your question about how I started. I think I started way mm-hmm. back.
It's all about this concept of community, which I love. Yeah. The examples you're giving is truly inspiring. No, from the aspect of how much you can learn from it, but also from the aspect how it really push you into the growth trajectory of your career. And I like when you mentioned like all of a sudden you're engaging in the forum, you jump from a junior to a lead position, people acknowledge your seniority because of your presence. And mm-hmm. I think that's something community really brings us as well through mm-hmm. the interaction. Mm-hmm. So yeah. The original question was, what inspired you to build the community? Which I think you're on a really good trajectory of explaining it. Now we see the foundation.
Yeah, so basically, like communities was, like it was a big part of my life. And then at some point, so I was helping people in LinkedIn. So a year ago, I was posting on LinkedIn very frequently, like, I don't know, every day. And then people would write me in these direct messages asking things like, hey, what do you think about that? Like, I don't know, I want to switch from the data engineering to data science. Can I do this? So most of these questions were quite similar, right? And I had quite a lot of them. And I thought maybe there is a way to answer these questions, not in one-on-one way, but scale it somehow. So maybe have a place where I can answer once and then people would see this. And then some of them, maybe you will like that. Somebody who I helped, who also will do this afterwards, right? And then, yeah, and then one day I woke up and thought, okay, let's buy a domain, Datadogs Club. I registered it in Slack. So then I set up a landing page in MailChimp. And yeah, so it took like, I don't know, half an hour, maybe less. And it just happened. And I put a link to my GitHub profile, I think, and my LinkedIn profile. And then people started to register. Like they would find these links somewhere on the internet, just randomly stumble upon them and register. And then this is when I realized that, you know, it's getting somewhere. Like people really like that.
Yeah. How many people are in Data Talk Club now?
Oh, no. Right now it's like 6,000, I think.
6,000? Yeah. And who is running the whole club? How many people you have on your team?
Well, I guess that would be just me. I mean, like it's a community, so I see that sometimes it self-organizes, so I don't have to like moderate it. So there are people who help me with that. And also we are running a course right now, like for about machine learning, and also we have like a team with teaching assistants, and then people who are students, like I don't know, not students, but who are taking the course. So they also help others. So I like that it kind of self-organizes.
Yeah.
But when it comes to actually like making announcements, or you know, writing somebody when somebody comes and starts spamming people, like blocking them, and then or asking them, hey, this is not the right place, please move this message to some other place. So that's usually me.
The admin work.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's impressive. It seems that your style is to, if I have an idea, I execute. I just do it, and then the organic growth and the community just also grows on the side.
Yes. Yeah, it's right that the growth is proportional to the amount of effort I put. Like, and for that, like, let's say I need to find speakers for the events. I need to make all these announcements. And it doesn't seem to, like, if I stop doing this, I don't think community will keep growing. So I think it's like I still need to do this.
Well, there are some efforts that are very important. Yeah. But among all the things you've been doing, what would you say is your biggest takeaway from the Data Talk Club?
Well, probably the biggest one is it seems like people really care about communities. Like they like communities. Many people come to Data Talks Club from Google. So they look up like data communities. They search this on Google.
Yeah.
And they come and they register. So this is something that people care about. I think that's one of the most interesting things. So it's not like I have to go to LinkedIn like every week and say, hey, there is this new event from our amazing community, and then advertise it on the events. And I think this is the main driver, like for growth of the community, events and things like this. But also it happens organically because people want to find a community. They go to Google and then find it. And that's really great. Yeah, I guess that's maybe the main biggest takeaway. And also it's another one, maybe it's more difficult than it seems. Like I didn't know that running a community is such a time consuming thing. Like I'm trying to automate everything, of course. So let's say compared to 9 months ago, I'm now, I can do things a lot faster. I have a lot of different scripts that help me to do some things like for publishing, for announcing events. So I have different integrations, like when I create an event in Eventbrite, the platform we use, it automatically, like once I press the publish button, It automatically sends, creates a post on Twitter, creates a post on LinkedIn, creates a post in Slack, these kind of things. But yeah, it took some time to figure this out, and still, like, it's quite a lot of work, actually. So I didn't know about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as it's growing, there are just endless things that you can improve upon as well. And on the other side, we can talk about, other than hosting the club, you also are book author. What was the initial motivation, and what is your gain from writing a book and publishing a book?
So that's an interesting question. So I can say that the gain is not monetary. So writing books doesn't make you richer. So that's one thing for sure. So the way it happened to me, so I was, when I was studying, I think because of my activity in all these public forums, I got noticed by a publisher, and then they wrote me, hey, do you want to review books for us? Like, be a technical reviewer. I thought, okay, why not? Because I'm getting a book for free. Like, for every book I review, I'm getting it for free. And then I also can, like, maybe for some topics, maybe there is something new, right? So I get to learn things. So for me, and I was a student, to me it seemed like a great deal. So I agreed, and then I reviewed like 10 or 15 books over, I think it was a couple of years. And then they wrote me, hey, you're doing such a great job of reviewing books. How about writing a book? Yeah, and I thought, why not? And this is how the first book, my book appeared. It was about Java for machine learning. Maybe another takeaway is, don't write books about Java and machine learning, because Java is not the most exciting language when it comes to machine learning. Anyways, so I thought, because I have this background as a Java developer, and then I now know machine learning, how about writing a book about that? This is how my first book appeared. And then I was taking part in a different book, and as a co-author. So there was like 4 or 5 of us. So it was like everybody would get just like, I don't know, two chapters. And yeah, and this book that like, it was about like the style there was project based. So every chapter was a project, like a standalone project.
Okay.
And people from Manning, this is the publisher that where I'm publishing my current book. So they saw this and they really like this approach, like project based. And then they reach out saying, hey, we saw this book. It's really great. Do you want to write another one for us? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, maybe I don't, because it's such a, it takes so much time to write a book. But somehow I thought of declining, but then I agreed. I don't know if I should have, it's because it's been like 2.5 years, but it's almost there. It's almost published. So this is, I'm now talking about this machine learning book camp. And this is how it happened. I think it was like maybe natural. Like mm-hmm. all these transitions, so it's not like I woke up and wrote a book for mining immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Just like step by step journey.
It's all a process. Mm-hmm. But do you feel by forcing yourself to organize your thoughts, your knowledge, to put in a book and then pass some knowledge to other people, you learned certain skills? For example, the most obvious one is you learn yourself about what you're writing about, and then the mm-hmm. communication. What is the biggest gain from there?
Yeah, so I learned a lot from the last book with mining. I learned a lot because they have a very structured process of reviews, and they follow the same kind of structure for all their books. And so this structure is really well thought through. So like, mining have been doing technical books for a lot of time, so they know how they should organize books, so it's easy for people, for technical audience to consume. And by learning about this format and getting constant feedback from the editors saying, hey, like, are you sure this is the best way? Like, hey, are you sure this is, we actually need to cover this? And when I produced like a chapter that is like, I don't know, 60, 70 pages long, they would ask me, hey, well, it's too long. Like, maybe you should remove something. And then for me, well, this process, What should they remove? What is the most important thing? What is not needed? By doing that, I learned a lot, and especially writing, because like I really needed to focus on writing, and I got a lot of good feedback. And then even though it took 2.5 years, as I said, I think I really improved my writing skills. So for example, now I also coach, I don't know if I can say coach, but I help my colleagues now with blog posts, for example.
Uh-huh. Cool.
That was useful.
I definitely acknowledge how important it is to write well, you know, especially coming from the technical background. We all know the bridge between data, technology, and the business is very hard for them to understand each other and build mutual understanding. So part of the things I've been pushing my team to do, as I don't have too much experience publishing and writing, is ask everyone to take a technical writing course. And I feel you become this great asset of your team and you have this great skill for yourself is very key transitioning from a data scientist to a more a leading and management position.
Yeah, maybe one tip, like what I learned from mining and in general from writing, is try to avoid long sentences. So if you have a sentence that is 2 lines long, that is a bad sentence. Like you have to really make it short. And then try to not use smart words. Like when I was learning English, I thought, okay, like I now want to learn this smart word, let's use it. And the thing is with technical books, most of the people who read these books, they are not native, like for them, English is a second language, right? So you don't want to be smart because people will not understand you, right? So try to be use as simple vocabulary as possible. And then for long sentences, try to break them like into multiple ones. That's probably the, like, it sounds easy, it's not actually. Like, how do you take a long sentence and break it?
Totally.
And, yeah, also read it out loud. It sounds silly, but it actually helps. Like, you don't have to shout, but yeah, maybe like also like try to actually say it out loud, not just in your head.
Uh-huh.
It helps, like, because then you see that some things just don't sound right.
Yeah.
And then you won't be able to see this when you just read in your head.
Cool. So far we've been touching upon your developing your seniority, your career, with definitely putting more effort into whatever you're doing by taking more projects and learning. On the other side, you're focusing on building this community of learning environment, and also you're producing writing to keep yourself moving forward and developing your communication skills. What about now? What are the things you're focusing on learning? What are some challenges you think you need to develop more knowledge to overcome?
Yeah, so right now I'm learning really like a bunch of different things. So from they are not related to data science at all, like marketing, copywriting, like how to build up a landing page, like some JavaScript, CSS. Like even I have a course that I haven't started about UX design. Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do now. And it really helps me because at work, I don't always need the skills. I do need them for, let's say, for my pet project, air quotes, this Data Talks Club, like how do I actually market it, and things like this. Yeah, so I did a course was a year ago about doing presentations. That's something I don't think I'm that good at doing presentations. So like how to make a presentation really interesting for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not like you just have a slide with text and you read out loud. You need to be better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires a lot of practice and rehearsal. And usually what I do before giving a talk is I don't rehearse. And I really have to, like, if I want to improve that, that's, yeah, so this, when it comes to data science and, like, in general data stuff,
mm-hmm.
so I'm trying to, like, staying on top of things is really impossible now when it comes to data. One thing I'm trying to still, not stay on top, but at least catch up and not to be too much behind. It's like all this ML engineering, like what is called now ML ops, but like basically, yeah, like putting things into production and all that. So I'm trying to just to stay, at least not to fall too much behind. And right now I'm not doing many things hands-on. So now I principal, I also have a team now. So even though I'm supposed to be like an individual contributor, yet I have a team. It's the team is small, so only two people. Compared to managers, they have like a team of seven people. So yes, I don't do much hands-on work, and it's pretty difficult to keep up with engineering if you don't do hands-on stuff. So that's a challenge for me. So how do I do this? Then I'm trying to build small projects, and then I don't always have time for these projects. That's another challenge. So how do I find time? Like I have work, I have pet projects, and I have also like a family, like a 5 years old son, and I also need to sleep. Like how do I manage to squeeze that in 24 hours? So that's another problem.
Yeah.
So there is no course about that. I think the courses, they lie. They don't actually tell how to do this.
Yeah. Well, I guess lack of time is shared across board, but it seems that you have many interesting projects to split your attention span and fill your day up, which is very cool. And coming back, as I understand, you're trying to develop a lot of soft skills for yourself, and kind of goes beyond your current position specific. And also in terms of data engineering, as you said, in the field of data is still evolving quite fast. And that's why I think the beauty of community is so cool, because people show up and they are eager to share about the latest news and the best tools. You know, you might spend 1 year or 2 years learning about one tool, but another day comes a tool you can learn 1 month and do it much better. So definitely worth the time to spend on learning and hearing the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. I think that's a very good sum up. So among the many projects, which is the one you're most proud of?
Well, I guess that, well, it's hard to select. So I like the book, I like the community. There is also like a GitHub repo with interview questions that got some attention also. Like if somebody is preparing for a data science interview, go check it out. So it's in my GitHub. One project we didn't talk about, it was about like when I was writing a book, there is a chapter about deep learning. Mm-hmm. And for that, so it's a project about image classification. And there, I had a problem. How do I select a data set for this project? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I find a data set that is not boring, that is not like cats or dogs, like the usual one, or mm-hmm. not menaced with these numbers?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, this is like, of course, it's possible to go to, I don't know, Amazon and scrape images from there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you cannot put this in a book. Like you cannot write a book about this data set. Like you cannot print this image, like as an example, right? Mm-hmm. So the moment you do this, it can have some consequences. For me, that was a challenge. And the idea I had is, what about crowdsourcing? Like, what about creating the data set specifically, like open data set that I could use and others can use as well? And the idea for me, it was actually my wife who suggested that, was to get a data set with clothes, like images of t-shirts, dresses, all these usual clothes. Okay. And we thought that it's a good idea because everyone has this in their home. Like everyone can take a picture, and this is a relatively easy data set to collect because everybody has that. And yeah, so I just wrote a small post saying, hey, I want to collect a data set of free images that is open, that you can use for whatever reason you want. You can sell it, you can print it, you can do whatever you want, like basically make it public domain, and including also, let's say, using it for a book,
mm-hmm.
Which was my main motivation, actually. And yeah, so I just wrote a small blog post saying, hey, Do you want to take part and contribute some images? And surprisingly, people started doing this. And then there was a company who reached out to me saying, we want to help you. The company is called Tagias. That was like, they contributed a lot of images. And I don't know if I'm most proud of this, but that was really great. Like, you could see the, again, power of the community.
Mm-hmm.
People believe in the cause, and like that it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And they would be willing to spend their time to actually collect images. Yeah, so that was quite a cool thing.
That's an interesting case. I've never heard about crowdfunding on image resources before. Very interesting one. So thank you very much. Is there anything else you want to touch upon that we haven't talked?
No, yes, maybe just join DataTalks Club. And if you have questions, feel free to reach out to me. So DataTalks Club is the best place for that. You can also find me on Twitter, LinkedIn.
Cool. Yeah. And among the many resources you mentioned, we'll all link them to our show notes so the audience have easy access. And I assume if they have more questions about developing data career, and they can reach out to you on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Yes, cool. Definitely.
Thank you so much, Alexey. I think you shed many lights on how to develop a professional data career, and many people are creating a to-do list for now, I assume.
I hope so.
Thank you very much. And
it was my pleasure.
Data for Future, we'll see you next episode.